It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is Brent Boydston. Brent is with Ag Center Solutions and joins us in a moment. Representative Rick Crawford is from Arkansas, a member of the House Ag Committee. Last year, during the Farm Bill debate, said bipartisan work is good, but bicameral is better.
Well, that's the real challenge here, because not only do we have to, you know, address those hurdles of bipartisanship, but when we cross the Capitol and now we're bringing in the Senate, then it, you know, obviously they're under a different leadership because they're in the Democrat majority, and therefore it may be more difficult even to create a bicameral environment that is also bipartisan. So yeah, we got some real challenges, and we've done it in the past. If we hadn't, we wouldn't have been able to pass farm bills, but it is a challenging environment.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Brent Boydston. Brent is founder of Ag Center Solutions, online at agcentersolutions.com. Brent, great to see you.
Tony, good talking to you again. Great seeing you.
Interesting. Ag Center Solutions. We're going to get to some of your background in just a moment, but tell us about the company. You're a founder of the company. What is it and what do you do?
So this is a company that I founded. I am a month into this. And in talking with various consultants, ag consultants around the country, what I found was there's no one that's sitting at the intersection of government policy, trade policy, and that foreign market access like I do, like I have positioned myself to do. So, for example, if you had a product that you wanted to bring to, say, Senegal from Lubbock, Texas, but you didn't know how to do that, I could help you through that. What's your product? What's going to be your, where's going to be your placement? How do you want to get it there? Are you licensed to export from the United States? Have you filled out your proper paperwork from the Department of Commerce? Do we need to meet with any government officials in DC on this? You know, I can help you through that. And then through my international network, get you in contact with folks in Senegal, for this example, to help you get that product placed where it needs to be in that domestic market.
Okay, so let's now step back for just a moment, because you bring a tool set that most people don't have, which is the opportunity for Ag Center Solutions. But how did you develop that tool set, i.e., what's the pathway to where you are today?
So it was long and winding, to be honest with you, Tony. So my interest in trade actually got started when I was working in Washington, D.C. I was working for a member of Congress who was on the a coalition of like-minded trade representatives in the House of Representatives. And then I got to work on the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. I was also working on the 2008 Farm Bill, which had some trade provisions in it as well. And then you fast forward, I left Washington, D.C. I went to Colorado Farm Bureau. In that time, worked with both Canada. We were having some trade issues with Canada. And at the time, Canada was Colorado's number one export destination, but we were also having some challenges with Mexico. At the time, I could tell you know, in depth about, we could talk about potato cyst nematodes and some of the SPS issues that Mexico was using to prevent fresh potatoes from moving into Mexico. But it was working with, you know, the USTR, working with the Undersecretary for Trade at USDA on these issues, as well as the Canadian and Mexican consulates, to find some solutions to these problems for farmers in Colorado. So that added another layer. And then I left Farm Bureau, came to Monsanto and then Bayer. And through there, I got involved with a group called U.S. Grains Council, which is U.S. foreign market development and market access for U.S. corn, barley, and sorghum. I was on the board. I'm the past chairman. I was board officer. And just learning the networks, the depth, the proper connections through that, that's what gave me the idea that to establish myself in this niche, if you will.
So it really sounds like this is, I don't know, it wouldn't be a traditional intersection, because you only usually have two roads going through an intersection. But I guess one of those would be like government policy,
right?
Trade policy. What, market access? Would that be another road into that intersection?
It would be. So I guess the easiest way to think of it is like railroad tracks coming together, three railroad tracks coming together for a single track. You know, there's always going to be the government policy aspect of it. you know, for example, if you can get your elected officials behind you, they can write letters on your behalf to the proper regulatory agencies that you may have to deal with. If you have a product that has to undergo federal approval before it can be exported, you can help expedite that process. And if we need to, talk to folks at USDA. But then the trade policy aspect of it is, what are your different trade deals? Are you going into a country that we have a free trade agreement with, like a Colombia, or are you wanting to move into a country where we don't have a free trade agreement? What's going to be the difference there? So I can help talk you through that. And then it's getting back to that, that market access of, if you want to move into this country, who do you know there? Again, that's where my network comes into play. I spent about a year and a half on the road with Grains Council. It was an absolutely fantastic experience. I was glad to do it. I'm glad not to be on any more long haul flights, but it's getting in and getting those connections made in the countries that you want to move products into. And it could be, you know, say you have 500 tons of non-GMO white corn that you want to move into a country, but you don't want to know how, and you just don't want to sell it for a market price. Let's talk. We can find someone out there.
You know, I'm glad you said that, because you mentioned free trade agreements and you mentioned Colombia. And I think some would be surprised to know, for corn, Colombia is the number four buyer of U.S. corn as far as export markets right now. But there are many that we don't have trade deals with. And, you know, I'm just kind of curious here with a new administration coming in, will there be some new opportunities?
I think there's very good opportunities out there to be had, to be honest, Tony. We've been, you know, the previous administration has been where they've been on trade. There was some potentials out there for different things, but they never came to fruition. So we kind of have a blank slate with what this new administration can do.
Okay. You mentioned some other countries. One I didn't hear, I don't think you mentioned, was Kenya. That, and this is also kind of uncharted territory for us, because the U.S. is bringing a president and an administration back in that's already been here before. Mm-hmm. And as they were leaving, one of the countries that showed some promise and they were working a trade agreement with was Kenya. How important will countries in Africa be down the road for us?
Africa is going to be a very, very important continent. When you look at on the east side, you have Ethiopia, you have Kenya, Tanzania, Mozambique. Those are all countries that are, for all practical purposes, doing very well economically. They we've seen good growth. We've seen good percentage growth out of their economies year over year, and they're wanting to get into that that global market, if you will. They understand what the U.S. brings to the table, and they do want to be partners with us. But it's not just East Africa. We've also North Africa is a very good market as well. Morocco, Egypt are solid markets for the U.S., but there's always opportunities to grow there. And then, you know, going back to West Africa, when you look at Senegal, which I used for my example earlier, but you also have Ghana, you've got Ivory Coast. These are all very stable countries that you are seeing a growing middle class that is developing some disposable income, and they are wanting quality products that the United States can offer, both for human consumption, but also feed grains.
We focus a lot on China, and I mentioned a new administration, and immediately the talk in ag circles is tariffs and China. And again, China has been a major buyer, a major customer of U.S. commodities, but they're not the only one in that region. The one that seems to me is having a big opportunity would be India. Is it just me, or does India offer some potential for U.S. commodities?
India offers a lot of potential for U.S. commodities. In fact, one of the things I got to do when I was with the Grains Council, we opened an office in Delhi. We were the first cooperator to actually have an office there, and it's been very, very beneficial for U.S. corn, barley, sorghum, ethanol, DDGs, those kind of products, to help get the word out and start developing that market. But you have a population of 1.5 billion people in India. They are going to need food. They're going to need the products that we supply. You've got some internal challenges there, but I think they can all be worked out. Every challenge has a solution. But India right now, I would be turning focus to India.
Okay, final question here, and we've kind of touched on this as well. When we think of exports, we think of, well, we're selling our grain or we're selling our product, whatever we're growing, we're selling it to somebody else and they're exporting it. But from what you said earlier, there are opportunities maybe that we have never really considered in the past. Is that safe to assume?
That is very safe to assume. You know, the one that I do like to talk about is ethanol for cooking fuels. And when I talk about this, a lot of people will kind of look at me funny. But when you look at going back to Africa, when you look at India and that region of the world, a lot of people still use wood. They use charcoal. They use animal dung for fuel for their cooking fires. And there's entities out there now that the U.S. can be part of that are replacing those with ethanol. Ethanol is clean burning, so you're getting that particulate matter out of the air in the homes. You're creating a better environment for the home and the community. But that is a large, large opportunity that I think should be explored more, to be honest with you. When you look at, you know, India, for an example, if you're using your 1 liter bottle of cooking ethanol and you fill it every day or every other day, and you've got 500 million people doing this, that's 500 million liters of potential demand that you have. And when you look at the what that converts into gallons, you have a potential for a huge unknown, untapped ethanol market.
I'm excited for you. And we actually had the opportunity to meet while we were on the road, and you were chairman of the U.S. Grains Council. But if we want to visit with you one-on-one, can we find you online?
Yes. My website is just agcentersolutions.com. You can email me. It's just brentb@agcentersolutions.com. Welcome any inquiries, or if you just want to know more, always happy to help and chat.
Brent Boydston is founder of Ag Center Solutions, again online at agcentersolutions.com. And this is the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton, the Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Brent Boydston with Ag Center Solutions.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with Brent Boydston, Ag Center Solutions, online agcentersolutions.com.
Attention High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association proudly presents Your Legacy is Tomorrow's Water. We're joining forces with partners across Texas to restore 50 Playa Lakes, crucial for recharging the Ogallala Aquifer and supporting our unique wildlife. Be a part of this transformative initiative. Visit PlayasWorkForTexans.com for more details. Let's secure our water legacy together.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
How will Tom Vilsack's service as the 32nd U.S. Secretary of Agriculture be best recalled? Perhaps his efforts to promote a circular economic model to agriculture in rural America, best reflected through the use of a whiteboard diagram. A message refined not just by multiple presentations over a three-year period, but as the Secretary notes, through the feedback and guidance of wife Christy in using examples to present his case.
Turns out we've lost a heck of a lot of farms, 544,970 of them. So I'm telling my wife this. She said, well, that sounds like a lot of farms, but can you put it in the context of something that people understand? How many farmers is that? Like, is that the number of farmers that are in Iowa today? And I start totaling up. How many states does it take to get to 544,000? Well, it turns out 10 states. People go, whoa, well, this is something. Now I've gotten people's attention.
And he adds, promotion of a circular economy to benefit all of agriculture is a mission he expects to continue in the days and months to come after leaving office. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.